Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
It's 5 o'clock on the most listened to sports talk show for your ride home.
What?
It is time for
the Falcons Report.
Whoa! KZ got another pick. Here's Julio down the far sideline and will score. Sacked. Grady Jarrett got another one.
You shall not pass.
The 5 o'clock Falcons Report.
Oh my heavens!
On Dukes and Bell.
We are Dukes and Bell. We start off every day and every hour by saying,
"Hey, man.
Happy Tuesday. I hope you're having a good day." And coming up, we're going to talk more about what went down on Sunday, what hopefully happens this upcoming Sunday as we open up the season, guys, at home, Sunday Night Football against the Eagles. And you'll be able to listen, by the way, right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. 6:20 pregame, 8:20 is a kickoff on Sunday night. And we will also get into some of the moves that the Falcons have made, because, Mike, moves have been made because of the injury situation with our O-line. So, with all of that said, how are you feeling today? Because, you know, we always say this, the day after, we're all either one way or the other. And I it's no secret, I was PO'd yesterday, just like Dan Quinn. And rightfully so. How are you feeling today?
Well, it's funny. We have totally flip-flopped. And if you guys know, there is nothing scripted about Dukes and Bell. We feel the way we feel. Today, Carl is feeling warm and fuzzy, and he used the 2016 Bucks game as an analogy of how awful we looked in that one, a real stinker. We actually scored some late touchdowns to make it close. Nearly got ran out of the building in the first half by Jameis Winston and company. And we came back to win a bunch of games. We were off and running.
Yeah.
Me, the more I've looked at some of these videos, because, you know, our buddy Brian Baldinger put some stuff up there, and I said Vaughn McClure from ESPN had some videos. You just look at our defensive line just getting pushed around, you know? So that's a concern to me. Remember, Dan Quinn's taking over this defense. And to hear Jack Crawford yesterday and to hear Tyler Davison talking to Dave Archer say, yeah, they threw some looks at us we weren't really prepared for. What? So that's got me a little in my bag today because, Dan, this is his show. Big DQ also took over the defense in 2016, brother. We went all the way to the Super Bowl.
We did. The thing, and maybe that's the most troubling part about, you know, Sunday, is the fact that no matter what you thought about the offense, and by the way, the whole Julio-Matt connection that should have maybe happened earlier in the game, there are a lot of reasons it didn't, right? Protection, Matt's getting hit a bunch. I get it, but it wasn't there, and I know Julio catches a touchdown late. And that's all fine and dandy. At the end of the year, that's going to add up. Whether he gets 10 or 12 touchdowns, we won't remember how this all played out if we're winning football games.
Right.
But I do want to talk about that, Mike, because with the new OC, Dirk Cutter, you talk about the defense, and then I'll get into this thing about, you know, feeling better and chilling. But Dirk Cutter, this whole thing about coming back made everybody feel good. It made everybody feel, you want to say it with me, comfortable.
Right.
Because you knew what to expect. This wasn't Sark, who had never called plays in the National Football League. This wasn't the first year of Shanahan where we struggled and we didn't quite understand if this thing was ever going to get right. This is a guy that's been here. And then the offense struggles the way it did. So as much as you're concerned about the defense, and mm-hmm. rightfully so, I'm concerned about the O. Because guess what? The run game was non-existent, and I know we got taken out of that with the turnovers. But say what you want. This is not optimal performance from our offense.
Right. And again, you and I were talking earlier, for guys that missed it, I was going round and round with a dude on Twitter. It's a put him up, see Dukes, I'm Mike Bell, ATL, and follow us at Dukes and Bell 929. But a guy was like, so what are you telling me, man? We can never compete against a top five defense? No, but if you're down 21-0, you can't compete against a top five defense because you can't protect your quarterback. Matt was sacked 4 times, hit 7. You know, you have no run game. The run game, as you just said, goes out the window. Freeze fumble killed us. Matt's picks killed us. But, I mean, when you go on the road, and guys, you take it for granted because you're playing Madden. And I don't mean to talk down, Carl, but there's people out there who don't realize how tough it is to win on the road. In Squidbilly was up there. That place was rocking. We get down 21-0. Everything you've tried to do now is gone. You can't run the ball. You can't do play action. It's just Matt there hopefully getting the ball away before he gets killed. That's what it became. Because you put it there. You made that happen because you played sloppy. Your special teams, the first 4 plays set the tone. We were garbage.
7 of 10 possessions, according to Dirk Cutter. He said this yesterday on the Viking side of the field. We scored 12 points. 7 of your 10 possessions on their side of the field. That's not going to get it done. It is Dukes and Bell. It's our Falcon Report. I'll break down why you should feel better. But first, it's always brought to you by our friends at Domino's.
Domino's, guys, a large three-topping pizza is $7.99. It's good for carryout every night of the week when you go to Domino's.com. Just one of the many great options. They've also got other nightly specials like those mix and match for $5.99. But tonight, make it a large three-topping pizza for just $7.99 with Domino's.
All right, man. Going back to a 31-24 loss to the Bucks. And I brought this up a little bit earlier because I think it's relevant to look at situations from the past and you go, is this how this could potentially play out? It could. But when you go back to the 2016 season, and I want you to think about this, if you were here, how you felt after Jameis Winston threw four touchdowns against us in the opening game, how you felt when we were down 31-3 in that game, if you remember. Now, the final score wasn't indicative of how bad we played. But we had four trips to the red zone, and we had one touchdown, you know. And Julio Jones only had 66 yards receiving that game. Freeman was not even the leading rusher. A guy named Tevin Coleman was. I'm taking you back, guys. He also led us in the receiving core with 95 yards in that game. Here's the point that I'm getting to. In 2016, and I remember Mike and I going, this road, man. We got to go on the road and play the Raiders and the Saints. Oh, man. And we went and beat them.
But you also, real quick, you're on the hangover of, as you said, we had an 8-8 season. Remember, we were on the hangover of that losing streak. We were 5-0. Nobody blows a 5-0 and not make the playoffs, and we did. So that was adding to our angst. Now we're coming off the 7-9 finish with all the things that went south on us last year, and you're saying, Dan Quinn, you've promised me a new improved defense, and we got run over. We literally got run over by the Vikings. So that's why it adds to everybody getting all in their bag on today and yesterday's show.
So you look at the schedule back then, and this is, again, I'm talking about 2016. We not only go on the road and beat the Raiders and the Saints 35-28 and 45-32 respectively, but we come back home, we handle the Panthers 48-33. We don't see division play this year until November. We don't see the Saints until November 10th, and then we get them Thanksgiving night. And then we went on the road, guys, and I don't even know if you remember this. The Broncos, we were like, oh, man, how do we go on the road and beat, you know, the Broncos? And we did. That was a game in which Tevin Coleman, who's now with the 49ers, had an amazing receiving game, 23-16. You know what? We lost the first one. It felt terrible, and we went on to win, or check that. We went on to win our next four games, but we also went on to the Super Bowl that year. Mike, I don't know if that's the case, but it gives me pause to think, you know what? Things can turn around. Things certainly can go our way. But you got to play better overall, and you got to be disciplined, and you've got to play inspiring football, and none of that took place on Sunday.
But the bad news is, again, losing Chris Lindstrom, we're going to see what Jermon Brown is all about. We did pick up John Wetzel, guys, a former practice squad, played for Arizona at times at guard. So you got some size and more depth. We do have more depth to weather the storm on offensive line. Now, let's knock wood, not have anyone else get hurt. But I am concerned about the Eagles just because I think, you know, their defensive front, Fletcher Cox, Jernigan, they got guys who can get after it. But you still got Doug Peterson. What is Peterson, Carl, going to look at from that Viking film and say, well, we can do some of this?
Listen,
because remember, they're a zone blocking team. They're a power team that can do some zone blocking. They can do the pitch. They can try to move guys outside where we struggled setting the edge. That's my beef. That's my concern.
Well, it should be. I mean, we haven't shown that we can stop a basic sweep in the first week of the season. Doug Peterson is one of the most creative offensive coordinators in the National Football League. But not only that, he's a risk taker. We saw it in the Super Bowl. He's not afraid to pull the trigger on plays in certain situations to say, you know what, we're going to go for it here. So you come in, Mike, you're feeling good about your win in week one after being down 17 to the Washington Redskins. Mm-hmm. And then you go, well, what is Doug Peterson going to do? Well, first of all, you're playing a better quarterback. Wentz is better than Kirk Cousins. And Kirk Cousins didn't have to do much last week just based on the scenario they played out. So you're facing a better quarterback. In my opinion, I don't know overall from a talent standpoint, you're facing a better defense, but they're on par. They're pretty good in situations and getting off the field on third down. The other part of it is with Doug Peterson and the Eagles is, Mike, their wide receivers, are you willing to say that they're better than Thielen and Diggs and company, what we just saw?
Well, they got one of the better tight ends, certainly. You got, they've had some weapons. DeSean Jackson, by the way, 2 50-yard touchdown catches. I saw a stat today that blew my mind.
Stretch the field.
You know who's second behind Jerry Rice in all the longest plays from scrimmage?
That guy,
DeSean Jackson. 31 plays of 50 yards or more. Jerry Rice has got 36. Randy Moss, I believe, had 29. So for all the things that DeSean Jackson has become, bouncing from the Redskins to the Bucs and now back to the Eagles, This is a guy that when he's got his head on straight and a system he believes in and a coach who believes in him, unlike Andy Reid, guy can do some really great things.
Yeah.
So that's a concern also because, you know, Aguilar, who am I forgetting? Alshon Jeffrey, and of course, DeSean Jackson, we just talked about, and a really good tight end. Multiple running backs by committee. They'll go with the hot hand, I guess, what Peterson will do. But that's what we got to defend against. And, oh, by the way, probably north of 10,000 to 15,000 Philly fans making the building.
Yeah, Wentz, by the way, and here's the thing. They're not afraid if they get down. This is not going to be like what you saw last week. He threw the ball almost 40 times. 39 times for 313, Mike. Three touchdowns, no picks. His quarterback rating, how well he played the position, 121. He was one of the better players in week one. And, you know, Coach Peterson came on our show during the summer, guys, and said, we're not going to hold back. He's ready to go. We're ready to go. So you saw that in a comeback win. Point is, they will be able to throw the football like that and trust Carson Wentz because he's able to do that. When you have a quarterback throw the ball 10 times like last week, you know, and again, he didn't have to. I just think the competition at that position goes up a notch. The skill level at the wide receivers, I think they're a little bit better. This is going to be a tough task.
By the way, in case you're wondering how it did work out, DeSean Jackson was the most targeted guy, 10 targets from Wentz. Zach Ertz, who's generally considered the second or third best tight end in the league, 7 targets. Alshon Jeffrey, 6. So Isaiah Oliver, there was some moments where you're kind of lumping your throat in Minnesota. It all goes down, Carl. All the things we've talked about, we can all feel a lot better. It'll all go down for the Falcons on the positive side. You get this guy on the ground. Where's the pass rush? What is Dan Quinn doing with how he's using these alignments, this sort of 3-4-ish thing, whatever we're doing? How are you getting heat on the quarterback, which we weren't able to do? That's everything. What do we talk about? We said a guy said offensive line and then rushing the passer. Those are the number one concerns for this team. And the first week, we didn't do either.
No, and I'm just going to warn you guys. It may be an adjustment before we actually see the results that we want to see. I know they've been working on this stuff all year, and you know, we said this. When Coach Quinn, I talked to him during the summer, Mike, and he was like, you know, we're going to work and get better, and it's specifically about Vic Beasley. We're going to do some different things with him. Remember he said that? Well, that's what he's doing. Problem is, fundamentally, guys are just not being where they need to be. Sometimes defense, Mike, isn't about tackling. It's about just being where you need to be
right. And
to make a play.
And then funneling the play back towards somebody else or the line or
absolutely,
whatever.
Absolutely, to make a play. So that was like a fundamental problem last week. It wasn't just that we got outplayed. Guys weren't where they needed to be. It may be a minute before we figure it out, Mike, and say, okay, hey, the pressure's going to come from here or we're going to have blitz packages coming out of this quote-unquote 3-4-ish base defense. I just think right now there's an adjustment going on defensively, and Coach Quinn's trying to do this. I'm not telling you it's on the fly. They've been working on it, but it is probably a work in progress because certainly last week it wasn't perfect.
But isn't Deion Jones arguably one of the best 4-3 linebackers in
hands
the league?
Down.
So why are you helping him or hurting him in a 3-4?
We're going to find out.
I mean, is he, you know, more of a, again, sometimes 5 guys on the line of scrimmage and Debo having to cover space. So I just, it's a work in progress, as we said. We've rolled reversal, not by any intention. Carl is feeling more woosah, and I'm feeling more what the blank.
Yeah, I just think, you know, and I'm trying to find some positives. You guys know me. I'm going to tell you straight up. But 2016, I was just as PO'd. 31-3 we were down.
You and I were in here, we were killing Shanahan and everything
just
else.
Just
yeah, we were going bananas.
So, you know, to say, all right, I know how I felt that day, and we came back and we won our next 4, and we went, man, we went on the road, we handled our business. Okay, we might be on to something here. And obviously, we certainly were. It is Dukes and Bell. Again, it's our Falcon Report brought to you by our friends at Domino's.
Domino's, man, large three-topping pizza for $7.99. It's carry-out only, but it's good every night of the week with Domino's. And one last NFL nugget, because they go take Antonio Brown on the Patriots. Trade Demaryius Thomas, Georgia Tech's Bebe Thomas, Carl, going to the Jets for a 6-rounder. So that'll give the Patriots, what, 15 picks next draft.
Isn't it crazy, Mike? They bring him in. Nobody wants him, and they trade him for value.
Right.
They get something for something that nobody wanted.
Patriot way.
That's the Patriots. Hey, turn this up, man. I hadn't heard it in a long time. Gangnam Style. Hey, man, we're coming back. Strong arm story of the day. Braves on fire. Hey, Atlanta Hawks season tips off next month. It's your chance to get tickets before they go on sale. To the public, guys, don't miss opening night presented by State Farm Saturday, October 26th. That's versus the Magic. Get your tickets early by visiting hawks.com/presale and tune in to 92.9 The Game for Hawks coverage all season long.
Yeah, you and I were talking off the air before we get to the big story. I was doing some of the ticket buy-in today.
Yeah.
To the flex pack, and now's a good time because you're getting the selection. Some of the prices, some tickets. Now, again, if it's a high, big ticket item, obviously, Carl, it's a Golden State, et cetera, it's going to be a little more. But I actually got some decent tickets for for the Nuggets, which again, okay, which were the surprise teams in the West. I got that. The Knicks were relatively easy to get, so I got some of those. But yeah, man, go check it out. Go to Hawks.com and load up because it's going to be a hot ticket. And pray for them to win six more games. And Uncle Mikey wins $1,000.
It's always about you. It is Dukes and Bell, man. Let's talk about our strong arm story of the day.
The Strong Arm Story of the Day is brought to you by John Foy & Associates Personal Injury Law.
I'm glad you picked that up, Bo Jahi, who's running the board today. A little bit slow on the button pushing there.
Yeah, he's a little Craig-like today. You got to tighten that up, man.
Little bit slow. Jahi, when I cue you, that's your cue. All right, man, let's talk about the Braves, Mike. And speaking of cue, man, they are playing really well. I'm so excited about what this postseason could bring. I know everybody, and let's talk about this for a second. Let's rewind before we talk about last night's game and all of the stuff. We can beat the Dodgers, okay? I know that everybody in the world
you
thinks
can do it!
That we can't do it. But if that's the team you're picking down the road, and you're going, all right, Dukes, it's going to be Dodgers and Braves in LCS, and we don't have a shot. I get it. They got three, maybe four starting pitchers that would be number ones on anybody else's staff. But we can beat the Dodgers. And, Mike, here's the bigger thing. I don't know if it'll happen, okay? But with the amount of games we have left, there's a chance that we could catch the Dodgers. We're three behind the Dodgers guys with the best record overall in the National League. You know what that means? Home field.
Right, and then the Dodgers, for those of you who don't know, would have to play more games on the road than they would at home. Yeah, man, I know that a lot of people, and I hate that fatalistic crap. Like, oh, you ain't beating the Dodgers. Well, then you know what? Don't get out of bed because you might get hit by lightning.
That's
you know what I mean? Let's roll the dice. Let's see what we can do. Bullpen is stabilized. I'm going to talk about Folty here in a second. Even with Acuna, and again, he goes yard, but he's had his ups and downs the last couple of weeks through the injuries, through all the things like Dansby out for a month. The Braves have done, what have they done? They've extended their lead.
Yeah.
You know, 9.5 games up on the Nats. Mike Conte just said magic number's 10. So you're feeling really good about where you are. The Dodgers, they've had some bumps along the way. We've got three in the loss column behind L.A. But I'm with you, brother. Do you have a feeling one way or the other? Because some people have said we're better to be the two and let the Dodgers maybe tangle with the Nats if they hold serve. I mean, you have any...
Were you guys...
I want to be number one at everything. Number one seed at everything if I can get it.
Were you guys... For not all of us. Most of us watch it on television. But for those of us who were there last year when Ronald Acuna goes grand slalomy, okay, in game three, it was electric. SunTrust, and we haven't been in it long enough to know this, but hopefully this is going to be our second season of going to the playoffs. It can be electric. I would rather give us the home field advantage. That might tip the scales to edge our way just a little bit. So I would tell you, yeah, I want to not only catch them, I would love to have home field. It may or may not happen. The point is that's how well we're playing. There was a time this season where nobody thought anybody was catching the Dodgers, and now we've been on a heater. And all of a sudden, we're three games away from having the best record potentially in the National League.
90-win season, and we're not stopping just yet. And again, as Carl said, it was electric. If you were there for that game and Acuna goes yard, it was Goosebump City. So let's go after it, man. And before we get into the rest of last night, can I just start off by saying a little mea culpa.
Yeah, man.
A little apology. Because the Braves, no matter what he does, whether he pitches 4 2/3 or 7 innings, when Folty starts, the Braves win. At the end of the day, that's what it's all about. But last night, I thought, quite honestly, this is the first time that Mike Foltynewicz looked like the Folty from last year. All-star Foltynewicz, big red, confident, ahead in the count, getting ground balls, getting outs. Pitch count was low, was able to go all the way to the seventh. Again, in our world, we should never say all the way to the seventh inning, but that's the reality in 2019. But 101 pitches, 72 were strikes, gets the ERA down, and only has three hits. Foltynewicz, the best I thought he's looked, and I think Jeff Francoeur agreed last night on the broadcast.
The reason is simple. Mixed pitches. And it's one thing to have command, but when you have command and you're mixing your pitches, meaning all your pitches are working how you're wanting them to, whether you're throwing a fastball, changeup. And we talked about this. Folty had the issue. This goes way back to where he wasn't getting guys out with his out pitch, which was his changeup. It was not working. So he went down to the minors, worked on it, make sure his mechanics were right, did all these things, got it back to where he needed it to be. And last night, I think, was the example of what you could potentially see in the playoffs. I've been asking this for a month now. Do you trust him in the playoffs? If you've got to throw Folty in a playoff series, in a game, how good do you feel? Because I know how you feel about Soroka and Freed and Keuchel. What's your answer?
if he keeps doing this, certainly, man. I mean, Keuchel is a guy that I thought, you know, he's kind of gotten right of the ship. A little underwhelming at first since he came over. But there was an article that I believe it was Ken Rosenthal wrote today in The Athletic talking about ever since we got Keuchel, remember the Phillies, I think, were in first place by a game and a half when the Braves made the move. The Phillies had obviously spent a lot of money on all the other free agents that they moved. We just had a big lightning flash here in Midtown Atlanta. I saw Squid Billy just jump out of his seat. But by the way, if you're walking down Peachtree, I would say to get in a building right now, Carl, or get on the ground. But anyway, back to the Braves. I love the way Faulty looked last night. It can continue this because I know I was very critical. I just thought he was so flaky at times, you know, and some of the things he was coming out of his mouth. I mean, last night, but you got to have swagger and attitude and confidence to pitch in the bigs. Glavin talks about it all the time, and he got away from that. I think he's getting it back.
I agree. It is our strong arm story of the day. A couple of other things to look at. How good has this offense been? Mike, we're seven shy home runs-wise of setting a franchise record. We hit 235 home runs in 2003. We're at 229. There is a chance, and a really good chance, with what you've seen with Josh Donaldson as of late. Acuna goes deep last night. Freddie, this is going to happen. You're going to set the franchise record. But not only that, Acuna still has a legitimate chance at 40-40. And for some of you, it may not be a big deal. You just don't see this every day. There's only been four players in the history of the game to do it. So if Acuna hits two more home runs and steals six more bases, you are witnessing history right here in the ATL, and it's something that we hadn't seen. So, again, I said this earlier, guys, as we talked about the Braves, Mike, is the MVP coming from our club?
If it's going to be anybody, it's going to be Freddie. I think Freddie's the guy. Josh, I think because of the way the writers are, Carl, that Josh would have to get his average up. Because unless you're watching the Braves all night, every night, you don't see how good he is at third base and how many runs. Talking about wins above replacement, how many runs has Josh Donaldson saved with his glove at third base this year? Or at least creating situations which put more pressure on your pitchers. They don't have to worry about that because he's been a vacuum over there at third. But I think Freddie's the guy average-wise. Bellinger and Yelich, the averages have dropped down a little bit. You could argue if you really wanted to make, and I know this doesn't help them if they don't make the playoffs, but right now they look like they're going to be the wild card. Anthony Rendon is leading the league right now in hitting in the NL, mm-hmm. and he's also only one guy behind Freddie. That's Anthony Rendon. That might be a guy that would get some consideration. But if we win the division and people finally respect Freddie, now I don't think the MVP should be a gold watch award like the Heisman sometimes is for guys who stick around.
No.
But if ever there was a year that Freddie has been the glue for this thing, this is the year.
Yeah, I would tell you, and I will say this, if we do end up with the best overall record, win our division, how can you deny what's going on with these guys? I don't know if there's any baseball writer who could just go, yeah, the Braves have been good, but there is no but. To Mike's point, if that happens, that to me takes us over the top with the Braves and somebody winning the MVP on our club.
Max Fried's going to go tonight, according to our man D.O.B., Dave O'Brien. His past nine starts, just like we talked about with Faulty, Braves have won them. He's 7-0 with a 3.02 ERA in that span, going up against the Phillies. Carl, he leads, does Fried, NL lefties with 16 wins, one behind the MLB leader, Eduardo Rodriguez of the Red Sox. And by the way, Big Poppy throwing out the first pitch last night.
Oh, man, how cool is that?
And then the Yankees whooped him.
Yeah, by the way, Nick Markakis is on his way back, guys. He's going to take live batting practice and could return depending on how he feels. That BP, I think, is going to happen tomorrow. So as much as we've talked about, you know, when's Markakis, when's some of these other guys coming back, we went 28-12 without Markakis in the lineup. And to me, I think that's the telling story about this season. It's not so much, oh, well, we're really good. I think we knew that early on. It is, okay, we're going to have lapses in the bullpen. We're not going to trust the bullpen. We're going to go through an array of guys who can't close for us. Oh, by the way, we're going to have to deal with some injuries after some of these guys go down, including Dansby and Austin Riley and old Nick Markakis, and we're still in this position. I think that is an amazing story that the Braves have been able to overcome. Now, that's a great line, Mike. But it means nothing if you don't get to the playoffs and at least do something in the playoffs.
Right, and Dansby, of course, he had the wrist issue, and it took a while for him to get it straightened out. I'm not sure how quickly Mark, getting all the pressure, Carl, all that torque, you know, you put on the bottom of your hand,
yep.
you know, coming through with your follow-through, because he got hit. You remember that it looked awful when it happened. But that's great. If Markakis can help contribute. You and I were talking earlier, real quick, just for guys who missed it earlier in the show. Man, you got to lock up Josh Donaldson?
Yes.
The $23 million sure seems like a hell of a bargain right now, to your point.
It is, man. I think, you know, it's not going to be that. It's going to be a little bit more because, again, he's come back. The Braves, This was, we are rolling the dice and hoping you're going to be the guy we saw in 2015. And Markakis, Josh Donaldson came back, bring a rain, and said, not only am I that guy, I'm better. And I think he's proving that. Mike, he's got these 37 home runs. He's four shy of tying his career high.
Right. MVP, man, in the AL. There's so many good things right now happening with the Braves. So let's be number one, Carl. Let's get the Dodgers to come over here and have to spend more time on the road. Regardless, let's not have any slip-ups like those 2000s with Bobby Cox in the late 90s, okay? We got to handle our business. But the good news is this team the last 2 years has been so clutch. And now, to your point, the bullpen is starting to straighten itself out. Fultonavich has his head on straight. Good things are happening.
All right, man, it is Dukes and Bell coming up. We got Mike Conti, obviously top three at 6. For those of you who missed our conversation with Todd Blackledge in regards to college football, you will hear that at around 6:20. Guy hit us up, Mike, and said, guys, can you really assess the pass rush? I heard you guys talking about the Falcons. And by the way, find us on social media, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, Mike Bell ATL. I'm at Put 'Em Up. See Dukes, the radio show, Dukes and Bell 929. Can you really assess the pass rush when Cousins only attempted 10 passes?
Right.
And he says the Falcons had a sack, but it's a great question because it's not as if he dropped back 35 times and we didn't get to him all day. I don't know. But to Mike's point, not only were we not where we needed to be from a defensive fundamental standpoint, but I just felt like they were doing what they wanted to do, and therefore you just felt like there was no pressure at all on Kirk Cousins.
No, it's a valid point, but still, you know, do you consider the Falcons a team that gets after the quarterback last year? Now Dan Quinn's taking it over.
No.
We've added Davison. We're strong in the middle, but you got out physical. You know, talk to anybody who played football in high school or got into the college ranks. When you get whooped like that, when you got guys just running you over and just basically doing anything they want, and it's very simplistic. That's what drives me even crazier, because we're supposed to have all this speed. We're supposed to be emulating what Seattle was when Dan Quinn was there. So where's all this speed and getting guys on the ground as we're watching Dalvin Cook take it to the end zone?
More on that coming up, guys. Coming up next, though, it's Mike Conti, in case you missed it on Dukes and Bell. It's Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and 92.9thegame.com. Coming up at 6 o'clock, top three at 6, guys. We'll talk about the big stories going on, including that crazy win last night for the Saints. I know most of us were rooting against them, Mike, but the Texans were able to give those guys way too much leeway, and Saints come back to win. We'll talk about it coming up at 6. Right now, it's time for Mike Conti, in case you missed it. What's going on, Mike?
We got this scandal brewing here involving Texas and LSU. Because, you know, Ed Orgeron came out yesterday and said, you know, when we were in Austin on Saturday, they did not turn on the air conditioner
Scandalous.
In our locker room.
It's not true.
And that the Louisiana Tech coaches warned us that this is a trick that Texas pulls on visiting teams, that they do not air condition the locker room. And it was like 100 degrees there in Austin
They
on
brought
Saturday.
Fans, right, Mike? Try to help because of Louisiana Tech giving them the heads up?
I did not know about that part. But anyhow, Texas's AD, Chris Del Conte.
Yes.
No relation. Has clapped
Good guy, though.
Back. I'm
Good
sure
guy.
I'm sure he is. He has clapped back today at Ed Orgeron. He put out the following statement. The comment today about our lack of air conditioning in our visiting locker room is the first we've heard of any issues in that area. We provide one of the best visitor setups available and are proud of the efforts we put forth in hosting our guests.
He's right.
He says our facility staff did not receive any complaints from either Louisiana Tech or LSU. And we have confirmed that our air conditioning in the visiting locker room is in good working order.
Yeah. Listen, whatever Chris Del Conte says, I agree with Mike Conti.
Oh, stop
it. I am not biased here. I'm simply saying, why in the world would you not have air conditioning working in a situation like this? You want to beat the best team in LSU. It didn't happen. But then, listen, we're not trying to get an unfair – I said we. We're not trying to get an unfair advantage.
I didn't know AC was a human right when it comes to football teams, Mike, getting ready for a broadcast. Or a game, I should say. Boston, famously, in the old Boston Garden, you had, like, the worst locker room. Iowa at, Kinnick Stadium, they've got pink lockers.
Pink. Yeah, right? It might still be pink. That was an old Hayden Fry trick. I don't really know if you gain a competitive advantage by leaving the air conditioner on or off. I mean, I'm sure – if it was off, probably didn't smell very pleasant. I remember when I was broadcasting arena football games, anytime we would go and play the Tampa Bay Storm, they had one of those like old school kind of crusty coaches that would always like pull dirty tricks on the opposing team.
Yeah, yeah.
And back in that day, I mean, the Arena Football League now is only 14s, but back in that day, when you traveled, the home team was responsible for – your transfers, basically. You know, they would send you a bus. They would send you to the hotel. The home team would arrange for the hotel. And it was basically a reciprocal arrangement. It actually made a lot of sense.
Right.
Like, if you wanted to be treated well on the road, then you had to kind of step up and treat road teams, you know, with enough class when they would come to your city. They would always send us the bus to the airport, and we would get on the bus, and it would be very obvious within 3 or 4 seconds stepping on the bus that someone had used it as a toilet. I'm not joking.
Oh. Sometimes those bus bathrooms, they just never ventilate,
and it just stinks up
the whole. No,
it was
like homeless people were sleeping in the bus the night before.
Well, I don't know about that, but I mean, it was not pleasant. Mm. You'd get to the arena. Same thing in the locker room, like no air conditioning. You have to go down the hall to find Gatorade. They'd have the Zamboni from the hockey game blocking the tunnel onto the field. And this is just something that he did because he thought these little things would be enough to gain a competitive advantage. And now that I think about it, I don't think we ever won at Tampa Bay, so he might have been on to something. But you still have the old school coaches that, I mean, heck, there have been allegations up at Foxborough that the visiting coaches' headsets mysteriously will jam up or not work in the middle of a very important drive.
Right. And by NFL rules, you're supposed to then turn off the headsets on the opposite side. I'm sure they always comply.
Absolutely.
By the way, Mike, as a follow-up with the Texas LSU story, they also had LSU band on the moon. They had them in the upper level. Carl, did you see that?
Of course I did.
I mean, that's not right.
What do you mean?
Why not?
You're the away team.
Yeah,
come on.
Hey, you get what you get.
Put them on the roof.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, Miami does that with Florida State. Florida State's got like a band. Miami's got like 12 people in their band. They just play the play. You go to a Miami game at the Hard Rock, every time our band fires up.
Well, two things. First of all, LSU does not, they're not required to bring their band. In the Big Ten, the band's only going to one road game a year. LSU's not required to go.
Yeah, they're full.
Second of all, LSU, I'm not taking aside LSU or Texas. I have no rooting interest in this.
It was funny watching Matthew McConaughey like make that face when they scored that last touchdown.
But, I mean, doesn't Texas have a right to do whatever they want with their best revenue-producing seats?
Mm. Of course.
You want to kick 500 people out of good seats to accommodate the visiting
fan? Not on that night, sir.
I don't think they're obligated to do that.
Need to upgrade the stadium.
I don't believe when Georgia faces the Irish, they'll put the Notre Dame band in the 600 section, but we'll find out.
No, but, I mean, honestly now, this has become a thing in college football. Mm-hmm. And you wonder why people don't go to games anymore. The visiting seats, like for the opposing team, get worse and worse and worse every year. At Penn State, they used to be lower level in the corner in the end zone.
They were decent.
They're now at the very top, like very, very top of the upper deck.
Yeah.
Very, very top.
Still expensive?
No. Okay. No, because like you give an allotment to the visiting team and they get face value tickets. So you could buy through the school. If it's like Ohio State or Michigan, they end up selling out, and then they have to pay over face value.
A little bit extra.
No, I mean, it's not like they price gouge. They just don't put them in good seats.
Okay. No, listen, it's a valid point. I think, you know, whatever, and I say this, competitive advantage, I am not condoning turning off another team's air conditioning. Most, to Mike Conti's point, most teams, it's a reciprocal thing. You go on the road, everybody knows, hey, this is the conditions. This is not 1950.
Right.
I mean, you know.
I'm assuming now Texas will come back and play LSU and Baton Rouge, right?
Yeah, I got to look at the schedule. I think so, yeah. I mean, I think it's a home and home.
Right?
Like last week when South Carolina played, was it Charleston Southern? They basically opened up their facilities and everything for them. They were coming back from Sherry State to Charlotte. They were going back and forth from Charlotte to Columbia.
I mean, that's what you do. You have to be a good neighbor. I remember Tulane during Hurricane Katrina. I mean, they played, 11 different home games in 11 different cities because that's just what they had to do. And UAB helped them out. And, who else? I want to say Florida State may have helped them out for a week. Like, they got help from a lot of different schools. So what goes around comes around. If Texas has to go to Baton Rouge, you know, we'll see if the air conditioner is working there. You invite that problem if indeed we're manipulating the air conditioner. There is a third option that the air conditioner was in working order and that it was working properly and even turned on, but the thermostat was set to like 87.
Right.
That is a possibility as well.
And then they had a "don't touch it" sign on it.
With masking tape. Well, no, don't touch.
No. In a lot of places, in fact, I don't know if we have it here, but in a lot of places, there are those clear cases that lock over a thermostat.
No, by the way, we do have one of those.
Yeah. By the way, you grew up in PA. I grew up in New York. Carl in Texas. What was the kind of physical abuse from Dad if you touched the thermostat in your house?
Oh, you didn't touch it.
What if you ever did?
My mother. We had air conditioner, and my mother would never ever let us turn it on. It could be 100 and 10 degrees outside, and we get that hot. Yeah. No! Use the fans. Use the box fans.
You think you're air conditioning the neighborhood?
We used to say it's hotter in the house than it is outside. Right. And then he'd say, well, go outside.
Jerry Seinfeld talking about it. He said, I was 32 before I finally touched the thermostat.
Yeah.
He was outside. So traumatized.
That's a real thing.
No, no doubt. Would you let your kids? I know you're going to have it. Would you let your kids touch a thermostat? The answer is no.
If they're not paying the bill,
there you go. Hey, Mike Conti, great job. Coming up top three at 6, we'll get you caught up on some other things around the world of sports. Patriots make another move today. Only the Patriots could do this. It's next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.